honesty.
Well, hello, everyone. News has been absolutely dominated by Ukraine this week. So third video in a row from me on, second video this week on Ukraine. But there's a historic meeting going to take place later on today, as you watch this on Thursday, between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump. I may, depending on what is said there, I may well do a special live stream later on, because the mood music coming from the British establishment seems to be that Keir Starmer's plan basically has been to go around Europe, shore up solidarity between the various European nations and the EU. That's the likes of Macron, who Trump has just met, Ursula von der Leyen, put on a united front. And I think that they're gearing up to tell Donald Trump, with or without the US, they're going to keep the war going, basically. How Trump takes that, I don't know, remains to be seen. However, there was a very interesting interview on Newsnight the other night with the former head of MI6, which I want to watch together here. I'm going to be giving it annotated comments. We're going to kind of watch this together, and I'm going to interject, because I think the Telegraph article that I read on Tuesday's video a couple of days ago, remember the last article I read was by the Telegraph, which was more realist in tone. And I've long thought that the Telegraph is basically the media's intelligence services outlet, if you want to put it that way. I mean, it seems like it's ghostwritten by MI6. Now MI6 is on the BBC, or former MI6 boss is on the BBC. And he basically, for once, sounds like somebody who understands what's happening. However, you'll notice that he's still pretty hawkish on Russia, and he's still pretty hawkish on what needs to happen now from a European security perspective. So I'm really pretty worried about this meeting later on today, because reading between the lines, I feel like the British establishment is gearing up to go all in on this, and it has the potential to go very, very badly wrong. Anyway, let's watch some of this interview together, and I'll pause it as and when necessary to comment.
Are we seeing the ripping up of a decades-long American policy that was always Russia can't be trusted?
I think we are in a new era where, by and large, international relations aren't going to be determined by rules and multilateral institutions. They're going to be determined by strong men and deals. I think of the Yalta Treaty at the end of 1945, where three strong men, as they were then, on behalf of the big countries, the strong countries, decided the fate of small countries. I think that's Donald Trump's mindset, certainly Putin's mindset, it's Xi Jinping's mindset. It's not Europe's mindset. That's the world we're going into for a whole set of reasons, and I don't think we're going back to the one we had before.
Extremely interesting opening gambit, because he's saying the world has changed. He's saying that the international rules-based order that everybody talks about is over, basically. It's over. Very, very interesting. I'm also interested with the angle that Sir Alex Younger takes throughout this talk. There is a kind of woman on there with her who's a little bit more hysterical, as we'll see in a moment. But his basic angle, as we'll see, is to say that Europe basically needs to understand this new reality and change its strategy so it can get a seat on the table by becoming a great power again. Very interesting. Let's listen to what he has to say.
Why do you say that?
Because the one we had before was based on the unipolar moment, where America had both the means and the will to assert itself across the world. It created what we call globalization, the international security structure. It's now a significantly smaller relative to others than it was. And of course, its will to be that person has diminished. So it still remains a prodigious country. You underestimating America at your peril. But its ability to make rules across the world, that's not there now.
OK. Catherine, after today's rhetoric, what will President Putin be thinking?
I think Putin is cheering. He's very happy at what he's heard. Even before Trump spoke today, even before the meeting yesterday in Riyadh, which brought Russia out of its isolation from the West ever since the war began. Already you had tycoons close to Putin in Moscow hailing the dawn of this new era whereby they believe that precisely this, that this is the era of strong men, the return of great powers who get to divvy up the world between themselves.
Yeah, the return of reality, you know, just like the world has always been, the return of reality, the return of strong men, not little snivelling bureaucrats like you love.
Over the heads of smaller countries like Ukraine and over the heads of Europe. And already I was speaking to one tycoon close to Putin who's sanctioned by the US, who is basically saying, well, Trump has now laid claim to Greenland, to Panama, the Panama Canal. He's laid claim to Canada, to Gaza. If he wants us to recognize his claims in the Western Hemisphere, the US's right to rule the Western half of the world, then they must recognize our sphere of strategic interest in Ukraine and also in Central Asia.
How do you respond to that, Sir Alex?
Yes, I mean, I think we are seeing deals, we're seeing a conversation about spheres of influence. And I think the only people who haven't woken up to this reality is us.
Yes! It's amazing to hear this said on the BBC. Finally, an adult in the room. The adults that we were promised. Although, as we'll see later on, Sir Alex, unfortunately, still has a touch of the old British establishment derangement about him. But anyway, let's continue.
Yeah, and there's an entry ticket to this conversation, it appears. And sadly, it's not our soft power or our values, it's hard power. And it leaves the category challenge for us in Europe. How do we develop that?
Hard power. Not soft power anymore, but hard power. It's the return of Pareto's lions, the era of the lion after the era of the fox. That's what he's talking about. The masters in force and coercion rather than the masters in persuasion. Interesting to hear the boss of MI6, the former boss of MI6, talking in this manner. But listen to where he's going with this. He's basically saying that Europe and Britain need to ramp up its military spending, need to ramp up its military so that it too becomes a hard power, so that it gets a seat at the table with the Russians and the Americans and the Chinese. Extremely interesting, because for Europe to be thinking in these terms again means that we're looking at a very different moment going forward to the one that we've lived in basically for our whole lives, where Europe has got to live in postmodern paradise, as Robert Kagan once put it, back in the neocon paradigm with America as the global policeman. Now we're moving back into a multipolar world, and multipolar means if Europe wants to be a pole, it needs to be a military force once more. Extremely interesting times, friends. Extremely interesting.
Get ourselves a seat in this conversation.
Donald Trump has, as we know, attacked President Zelensky today. He hasn't condemned Russia's invasion. He didn't ask them to stop their attacks on Ukrainians before that meeting in Riyadh yesterday. I mean, President Putin must be absolutely in dreamland.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's a French businessman I speak to who's based in Moscow, also working with tycoons very close to the Kremlin, and they're saying everyone...
I hate the little bit of kind of female regime solidarity they have here, because this woman here, she's clearly uncomfortable with what Sir Alex Younger is saying next to her. But the BBC journalist is like, don't worry, I'm still, I'm still an old fashioned shit lib just like you. And it's funny how they, you can just see the body language and the energy of how they play off each other. But anyway, let's continue.
One loves Trump here, even the FSB. We all raised a toast when he became president. And I think it's almost sort of beyond their dreams, too, about how quickly the rhetoric has changed. I mean, we saw only a few weeks ago, Trump was still trying to act tough in relation to Russia, saying that its economy was weakened, which is certainly true. They've got sky-high inflation, interest rates are spiraling, the economy is definitely slowing down, and probably they can only continue to perpetuate the level of military production for another year before things start going pear-shaped. And, you know, Trump had a strong hand, and he was apparently showing he was ready to leverage that, saying there'll be more sanctions, we don't get the deal that we want. But now, literally in the space of a few weeks, whether he's responded to Putin's flattery of him, just a few weeks ago, Putin had said that Trump should have won.
Or it's possible he got into the White House and saw what the actual reality of the situation was and was like, oh, right, I misspoke before. Now I have all the facts in front of me. I'm going to respond. I mean, she never even puts that possibility on the table because she's too busy pushing these kind of ephemeral talking points. In many ways, yesterday's talking points. This woman here has failed to adjust her analysis to a new situation. But anyway, let's continue.
Won the 2020 election, and he would still have been president had not the Democrats stolen it from him. And whether that's to some degree worked in softening Trump up, or whether it's the offer of
guy from MI6 is being, he looked away there to say, shit, that was us, wasn't it? We tried to do that. Oh, shit. You look at, I wonder what he's thinking. Amazing. Anyway, let's continue.
Of hundreds of billions of dollars in deals that they seem to be dangling in front of Trump and appealing to his sensibilities as a businessman and a real estate developer. I mean, Trump is in acquisition phase now. We've seen him laying claim to all these different countries. And I think, you know, he's certainly looking at Russia, too. And Russia is able to manipulate him and flatter him very easily.
Well, Donald Trump's attack on President Zelensky came after Ukraine's leader accused the US president of living in a disinformation space. And he specifically referred to Mr. Trump's false claim that Mr. Zelensky's approval rating among Ukrainians is only 4%.
Since we're talking about 4%, we have seen this disinformation. We understand that it is coming from Russia. We understand and we have evidence that these numbers are being discussed between America and Russia. It is unfortunate that President Trump, and with great respect for him as the leader of the American people who constantly support us, unfortunately lives in this disinformation space.
Not very wise from Zelensky here, picking a fight with Trump on the eve of these negotiations.
Why do you think, Sir Alex Younger, President Trump wanted to respond to that?
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate, and I agree with Catherine, this would be emboldening to Putin. I don't know whether Donald Trump actually buys the Russian line, but I think the Russians probably think he does, and I think that significantly diminishes his leverage. And I saw this happen in Afghanistan, where he gave away the biggest concession before we even started. It's a strange art of the deal, honestly. Zelensky and Trump, they're in their way different politicians. Zelensky had no choice, I think, but to respond when he was accused of lacking democratic legitimacy. And Donald Trump is notoriously thin-skinned, and we've got into this spat. I do not think we should read too much into it. These negotiations are at a very early stage. They're going to be highly complicated. Exactly as I expected, Russia has gone maximal, to the point that they may even have overreached. It's going to be very, very hard for Trump to cut through this in a way that produces anything that isn't an abject humiliation.
What do you mean, Russia have overreached? What do you mean?
The issue is that Trump and Putin are talking about different things. So Trump thinks this is about territory, characteristically, as a real estate guy. It's about land, giving land to Russia in return for peace. It's not about territory, and Putin said, it's about sovereignty. Putin was super clear when he started this war that the existence of Ukraine as a sovereign and free country was an unacceptable affront.
Again, they love pushing this line. As I talked about at the start of the war, it was about the ethnic Russians living in the Donbass territory. It wasn't about what this guy is talking about. I don't know why they keep on slinging this line, right? He said that he doesn't want Ukraine to be NATO aligned, that it's unacceptable for Ukraine to be part of NATO, and that ideally he wants Zelensky gone. Those were the three things that he talked about at the start. He did not talk about Ukraine not existing anymore as a nation. Don't know why they keep on pushing this.
To Russian security, he will not stop until Ukraine isn't a country anymore. And that is a completely different conversation. And by the way, there's more. There's Europe putting NATO putting constraints on its presence in Eastern Europe and going back to previous borders in 97. This is well out of scope. I don't think it's stuff that Donald Trump has clearly thought about. But you're instantly into it. Russia came out today and said they wouldn't accept Western troops in Ukraine. Of course they said that. They are determined that Ukraine should be an undefended basket case. But we're talking about security guarantees.
No, they're determined to get Western presence out of Ukraine because it's unacceptable. They see, why does NATO exist? Why didn't NATO accept Russia as a member? Why has NATO been so hostile? By his own admission, the borders have changed from 1997. All of these things are things that Putin's talked about time and again. His framing on this is, I think, a little dishonest. So despite the fact that this dude is more realist than the two women in the studio there, and more realist than most of the talking heads, he still repeats a lot of the regime's lies when it comes to this issue.
Use as a necessary endgame. It still feels, for all of this bluster, a fundamentally irreconcilable problem.
Right. How worried should people who are watching tonight be?
Well, I think that as a European, it's a massive wake-up call. Whatever you think about this, all the smoke and dust and mirrors and complexity, and I don't know how it's going to end, I know one thing for certain, which is that Europe will own more of this at the end than it did at the beginning. Now, I do not want to exaggerate. The Russian army has performed risibly. It's not going to march into Warsaw tomorrow. But nor should we obscure the fact that this will be hugely emboldening, and over time they will build up their capabilities. The reason we don't need to be that worried is we are 10 times richer as European NATO than Russia. We absolutely have the capability to build up the necessary military forces to resist this.
So this former head of MI6 wants a massive military build-up in Europe. Are you listening to this? He wants a massive military build-up in Europe, okay, to quote-unquote avert World War III, because he's convinced that Putla is not going to stop in Ukraine, but is going to carry on going to Poland and beyond. They are obsessed with this idea. I heard it repeated over and over and over and over again. You know, maybe it's the old Mackinder Heartland thing, you know, redux. But looks like we're going to get a military buildup. Regardless of what happens in the discussion between Starmer and Trump later on today, this seems like it's happening, doesn't it? One way or the other.
But if we don't do that, then yes, this is the stuff of nightmares.
The visit of the British Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, to Washington next week. I mean, there's already a lot of attention and focus on that, but it becomes more acute, I suppose, now. I wonder what Sir Keir Starmer should be saying to Donald Trump next week. Go on.
Don't know what it is with this woman. She looks like she's sitting there with a bug up her ass, doesn't she? just the face on her. Oh, I tell you, let me pause at this moment to remind you to buy a course at the Academic Agency. All this week I've been playing my brand new advert for Foundations of Shakespeare. Buy it now. And when we come back, we're going to finish up with some of the more worrying aspects of this of this interview in the final third.
Who was Shakespeare? What if everything you have been taught about Shakespeare is wrong? What you need is a non-woke university-level Shakespeare course based on solid scholarship, stripping out all recent nonsense since 1980. A comprehensive introduction to studying Shakespeare, featuring 14 lectures and covering 8 major plays. A Midsummer Night's Dream, As You Like It, Twelfth Night, Measure for Measure, Hamlet, Othello, King Lear, and Macbeth. Foundations of Shakespeare. Buy it now from the Academic Agency.
I don't mind it, Catherine. Do you have...
Well, I think, first of all, we would have to hope that Europe has its act together before he goes there. There has to be a unified position, otherwise Trump isn't going to take anything he says seriously. We've already heard Ursula von der Leyen speak about the need to create a 700 billion euro defense fund. And if that finally gets off the ground, then yes, Starmer will be speaking from a position where he can be respected. If not, it's going to be just the usual chit-chat and might not mean anything.
What do you think the British Prime Minister should be saying to Donald Trump?
So two things. First of all, I absolutely agree with Catherine. We need to organise to effect to demonstrate that we're prepared to play a role, take control of our own environment, recognise that we've got to develop our power, and that's got to happen quickly. Donald Trump is not wrong about everything. There was free riding in Europe, and this needs to be sorted out. And the other thing is what I have just said. I think you need to explain to Donald Trump why... giving away Ukraine as a country, giving away its sovereignty, would be a devastating mistake. Trump has already said that Putin should not be allowed.
I love how they talk about Ukraine being a puppet nation of NATO. Is sovereignty. I mean, it's the framing that always gets me with these things. You know, to be a sovereign nation means to have a puppet leader there like Zelensky. You know. Who buys this stuff? Well, only most of the British public, only most of you bozos watching this video. You know, as every time I talk about this, I hear the same old rubbish from, you know, vocal people in the comments. I don't know what it is about this. People are really kind of off their rocker when it comes to this whole issue. Me, I'm a realist. I understand that what NATO wanted to do in Ukraine was never going to be acceptable to the Russians, who are going to rule their own backyard. Basically, they're not going to allow their enemy, their rival and enemy, to set up shop in a place like Ukraine. That would be like the Russians, okay, occupying Mexico, or the Russians occupying Canada, right? That would be unacceptable to America, wouldn't it? Or it would be like, China owning Ireland or something. That would be unacceptable to Britain, wouldn't it? So, you know, the rhetoric around this has always been, you know, dishonest, as well as being fantastical. But anyway, let's continue.
To be seen to win. He seems to understand that as a concept, although I accept that his tone has changed. He was quite complicit in Afghanistan, even though he pinned it on Joe Biden. He gave away the farm before it even started, and that led to the fiasco. He can't own a fiasco like that. And then think of the example this sets for Xi Jinping, sitting across the Taiwan.
He keeps on talking about Afghanistan. Listen, Donald Trump wanted to withdraw America from Afghanistan. The manner in which it was done was what was farcical. The kind of kamikaze shit show under Biden was what was unacceptable to Trump, and why that turned into a fiasco, right? The principle of pulling out of Afghanistan was supported by most of the American people, most of the people who voted for Trump and who voted for Biden. That's why Biden carried on. So, you know, he keeps on coming back to that, but the whole idea of getting out wasn't the issue. It was the manner in which it was done. Anyway,
straight from Taiwan. I mean, that goes straight into Xi Jinping's mind.
Yes.
So these are the things that I would be advising the Prime Minister to dwell on, although I'm sure he's got a lot of ideas of his own.
You've mentioned Afghanistan a couple of times. People have reminded me that President Trump met the North Korea leader twice.
Yes.
There was no deal because President Trump then, in the first term, didn't get what he wanted, and he walked away. Mm. So we have seen that side of him as well. Is that a possibility with President Putin?
Yeah, and indeed, it's important for us to note that our approach to either Gaza or Ukraine, take your pick, wasn't working. So I don't intrinsically reject his instinct to disrupt this.
Okay.
Nor do I even think that having a conversation is a bad thing, if what you've just said is in his armoury.
I mean, you are speaking in moderate terms, you're very measured. It sounds like you are completely stepping back from all this rhetoric of the last 7 days. Do you have confidence that a fair and sustainable, to quote the words of Marco Rubio yesterday, settlement will be the outcome of this?
No.
No?
No. I think it's wide open. So I think it can be. And actually, I think Trump has quite considerable leverage.
No, he doesn't, because Russia won the war. This is the thing nobody wants to admit. Anyway, let's carry on.
As Catherine said, the reality is that the Russian economy is grossly out of shape and cannot be run like this for more than another year. And Putin...
Fantastical, delusional. They think that if they keep on saying it over and over again, they're going to kind of will it into reality. It's just not the case, though. It's just not the case.
He's lost 800,000 killed or wounded, which even for an autocrat like him has got to have an effect. And most important...
800,000 killed or wounded. Can I get a fact check on that, please? I mean, that seems like a vastly inflated number, if you ask me. You know, is that true or is that wartime propaganda? And this is the trouble with a regime that always lies. I remember Putin called it the Empire of Lies, right? When this dude tells me it's 800,000, do I take that number at face value? Do I say it's true or do I assume it to be a lie? And this is the trouble. Everything these people say, I assume to be a lie. Right, I mean, maybe it's the case that Russia really lost 800,000 men or had 800,000 casualties in this war. Instinctually, though, doesn't sound right. Sounds inflated. Sounds made up, doesn't it? Anyway, let's continue.
Of all, I think that this is a huge psychological moment for Putin. He's been waiting for years for Trump to get in. And if Trump actually turns out not to be the opportunity the Russians expect, they don't have another plan. So there's quite a lot of leverage here. And I think if it can be firmly established in Donald Trump's mind that having a residual free Ukraine is his bargaining point, he can get that. And I think if that happens, we're going to be okay. It's a wake-up call. We need to organise to effect. It is a...
And this is the thing I'm worried about. This stuff that this guy is slinging here... This is the cope. This is the delusion. This is the hope that Starmer is going to go into those talks later today with this bullshit. Okay? Britain thinks it can pull this back. The entire establishment is not giving up on this. This is what worries me, friend. It really does worry me because this sort of talk, it's going to drag us back in and it's going to, I swear, they're not going to stop until they create another world war, these bastards, if we let them. Anyway, let's carry on.
Huge tragedy for people who will be left behind the frozen front line, but we can deal with that. If it's do a deal at any cost, get out and give it to the Europeans, then I think that's a big problem.
Wow. Okay. All right. So, yeah, I thought that was a very interesting moment that I thought I'd review it in full. Kind of longer videos this week, but it's a pretty important week, I think, in world politics and in world history. And, you know, depending on what happens in the meeting between Trump and Starmer later, I may well come back and do a special one-off stream Squeaky bum time for everybody concerned, but it's going to be interesting one way or the other. You know, Britain is going all in. Obviously, there's another fellow. You know, the nothing ever happens meme. Yeah, a lot of people will be backing that dude. I never count him out, of course. But yeah, surely we live in interesting times, friends. Whew, I'll possibly see you later. Maybe, maybe not. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.